Welcome to the HSD podcast series. I'm your host today, Laura Franco, Vice President, Director of Post-Acute Regulatory Strategy. Today, I'm joined by Jennifer Lamb, RN, MBA, and mock surveyor for Life Care Services. And we're talking about the new FTAG numbering system and the regulations that are contained in each of the new FTAGs. Our goal today is to help our listeners understand each of the new FTAGs fully now that the state surveyors have implemented them and are using them in our survey process. So today we're going to be talking about FTAG 605, Right to be Free from Chemical Restraints. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you, Laura. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm happy to be here and I'm ready to share some more information about these FTAGs.
Good, good, good. So I think what's first important is if you would recap for our listeners what they can expect from this series of podcasts that we've been doing.
Absolutely. Well, we have been and we will continue to be covering one FTAG per podcast contained under the 49 tags identified as substandard quality of care. Now, substandard quality of care is defined by CMS as having more than one deficiency related to participation requirements under resident behavior and facility practices, quality of life, and quality of care that constitute either immediate jeopardy to resident health and safety, a pattern of or widespread actual harm that is not immediate jeopardy, or a widespread potential for more than minimal harm but less than immediate jeopardy with no actual harm. We will be using the State Operations Manual, or SOM, Appendix PP, the guidance to surveyors for long-term care facilities, and we use the one that became effective on November 28th, 2017, giving us the most recent tool, and it's the same one that the surveyors are using with their new survey process, and it's our best tool, best device to learn as much as they know and to get us prepared for our state surveys, and I'd advise, both of us would advise, that you download and follow along to get the most complete information.
Thank you. F605 discusses the use of chemical restraints. And just like our podcast on physical restraints, this tag comes from F222. F222 defined chemical restraints, and now F605 is a standalone tag for chemical restraints that breaks it down even further. So I think that's important to note in here. And Jennifer, with that, let's look at the definition of 605 then.
Sure. Laura, F605 in the SOM says, the resident has the right to be treated with respect and dignity, including the right to be free from any physical or chemical restraints imposed for purposes of discipline or convenience and not required to treat the resident's medical symptoms. The resident has the right to be free from abuse, neglect, misappropriation of resident property, and exploitation as defined in the subpart. This includes but is not limited to freedom from corporal punishment, involuntary seclusion, and any physical or chemical restraint not required to treat the resident's medical symptoms. The facility must ensure that the resident is free from physical or chemical restraints imposed for purposes of discipline or convenience and that are not required to treat the resident's medical symptoms. When the use of restraints is indicated, the facility must use the least restrictive alternative for the least amount of time and document ongoing reevaluation for the need of restraints. As you may recall, this is exactly the terminology that was used for F604 regarding physical restraints, but they're going to break it down a little bit and it's going to talk strictly about chemical.
That's correct, Jennifer. However, the difference is in the intent. According to the SOM, the intent of F605 is for each person to attain or maintain his or her highest practicable well-being in an environment that prohibits the use of chemical restraints for discipline or convenience and not required to treat the resident's medical symptoms. So when a medication is indicated to treat a medical system, the facility must use the least restrictive alternative for the least restrictive amount of time. So that makes sense. The least restrictive alternative for the least amount of time. They also have to provide ongoing reevaluation of the need for the medication and not the use of the medication for discipline to the person or for convenience of staff.
Absolutely. And surveyors don't claim to practice medicine by determining what a resident should take or when, but they do investigate the basis for those decisions and the interventions that affect the resident.
Well, and just to clarify the words chemical restraint, CMS actually defines it as any drug that's used for discipline or staff convenience and not required to treat the medical symptoms.
Yes, and if there's no appropriate rationale or monitoring of a drug, it can be considered a chemical restraint. It doesn't really matter what it is. If it's something that can cause a sedation or anything like that, or impair their abilities at all, it doesn't matter. If it's not got an appropriate rationale or you're not monitoring it and documenting that drug, it's considered chemical restraint.
Okay, so explain to our listeners what the surveyors might look for if they were looking to cite FTAG 605.
Well, any medication ordered for the resident must be identified and documented in the resident's medical record. When any medication restricts the resident's movement or cognition or sedates or subdues the resident and is not an accepted standard of practice for a resident's medical or psychiatric condition, that medication may be a chemical restraint. Even if the use of the medication follows accepted standards of practice, it may be a chemical restraint if there was a least restrictive alternative treatment that could have been used and given that would meet the resident's needs and preferences, or if the medical symptoms justifying its use has subsided. The facility is accountable for the process to meet the minimum requirements of the regulation, including appropriate assessment, care planning by the interdisciplinary team, and documentation of the medical symptoms and use of a least restrictive alternative for the least amount of time possible and provide ongoing reevaluation. Oftentimes, when I'm conducting mocks and in the past with state surveys, a lot of times the facility was tagged based on not having appropriate documentation, actually. It wasn't so much the medication, but the documentation showing the use of least restrictive alternatives or appropriate rationale for the use of the medication.
So there it is again, that documentation, document, document, document. So if we have residents who have medications that give a sedated effect, the staff really does need to be diligent with that documentation. They have to show that the medication is necessary and that it was used in the appropriate fashion.
Yes, and it's vital to have the documentation on point. It is also important to document in the record any underlying issues that may cause behaviors, such as pain or delirium or even environmental factors. Other factors that should be reflected include whether there is an adequate indication for the use of the medication, like if psychotropic medication is not administered unless the medication is used to treat that specific condition, whether an excessive dose or duration of the medication was administered to the resident, whether there is adequate monitoring for the effectiveness of the medication in treating the specific condition and for any adverse consequences resulting from the medication. Also, whether a resident who uses a psychotropic drug is receiving gradual dose reductions and behavioral interventions unless clinically contraindicated. And lastly, whether a resident who receives a psychotropic drug pursuant to a PRN is not administered the medication unless the medication is necessary to treat a diagnosed specific symptom as documented in the clinical record.
Well, and that's important because a PRN medication that's on a limited time basis would not be considered a restraint. The dosage cannot exceed what's prescribed by the practitioner. And if the resident doesn't respond to the initial administration of that specific PRN medication, the practitioner is now responsible in that we have to contact the practitioner and we have to talk to them about reassessment of the resident's medical condition and evaluation of the interventions. So when I say the practitioner is responsible, I mean we are responsible for contacting that practitioner and making them aware of what's happening so that we have to do a reassessment of the medical condition. The administration of that PRN medication has to be discontinued when a resident doesn't need that medication for treatment of a specific medical condition. And it's important to note that if the staff continue to utilize a PRN medication that either subdues or sedates a resident and is not treating a specific medical condition, this would be considered a chemical restraint, and it would be considered that way for staff convenience or discipline of the resident.
Exactly. So there has to be an appropriate rationale, and documentation has to reflect this.
What are some of the risks and the psychosocial impacts of actually using a chemical restraint?
Well, with the use of chemical restraints, a resident may become subdued, sedated, or withdrawn. The resident may sleep more and during hours that they might not usually sleep. The resident might have limited functional capacity, loss of dignity, self-respect, and orientation. There may have decreased levels of activity and a decline in skin integrity, confusion, and depression. Several years ago, I actually saw the results of a resident who was administered morphine regularly for pain that was no more than a headache, actually. This was back when I was a state surveyor. The resident had an order for Tylenol as well as the morphine, but the staff was actually administering the stronger medication because the resident tended to linger around the nurse's station and wanted help with various things. So it was kind of a staff convenience thing, actually. So this resident was often seen slumped over in her wheelchair or sleeping for long periods of time in her bed, and the resident was not attending activities or visiting with family, and family was concerned as well. So the quality of life for this resident was extremely low. This facility was cited for both unnecessary medications and for chemical restraint. Now, when we went back for the revisit after the morphine was discontinued and so forth, that same resident was seen active, walking, attending every activity, alert and oriented, socializing, and living a much better quality of life. So chemical restraints for a resident, for staff convenience, is never okay, and it can be detrimental.
Wow, that's a pretty strong story. Thank you for sharing that. Can you also tell us some other ways surveyors might key in on whether the staff is giving medications as a chemical restraint?
Yeah, absolutely. There are many examples in the SOM, but some of those include staff indicated that a medication is being administered to calm down a resident. A resident receives a medication to prevent behaviors such as wandering or to quiet a resident who yells or repeatedly asks for help. Or if a medication is being used to sedate or subdue residents due to low staffing levels, or if a resident is resistant to care.
Well, in addition to the things that you mentioned, Jennifer, I also understand that surveyors will look for such things as drowsiness, excessive sedation, neurological signs, confusion, agitation, anxiety, social isolation, and lack of participation in activities as an avenue to actually direct their investigation and to look at chemical restraints.
You're absolutely right. Anything that jumps on that surveyor's radar is going to prompt further investigation. So you can find an expanded section of what the surveyors will look for and what questions they may ask in interviews and what they look for in record of use. You can find those in the SOM as well to help you.
So the surveyors will cite FTAG 605 on certain key elements of noncompliance. And a couple of those are if a facility fails to assure that the resident is free from restraints imposed for discipline or for staff convenience, or if the facility fails to identify a medical symptom that was being treated with the use of medical or chemical restraints. Or if a chemical restraint is in use, the facility can be cited for that noncompliance if they fail to provide that least restrictive alternative for the least time possible, including and as appropriate, the development and implementation of a plan for a gradual dose reduction in the absence of identified and documented clinical contraindications. And then finally, monitoring and evaluating the resident's response to a medication and discontinuing the use of the medication when the medical symptom is no longer being treated, unless reducing or eliminating the use of that medication may be clinically contraindicated.
Yes, and if any of those that you just listed are not adhered to, the facility is out of compliance and will be cited.
Then that's really, really important information. Again, seems to come down to that documentation and medical necessity.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've covered a lot of ground with chemical restraints, and I would like to thank our listeners for joining us today and for continuing to join us in our series of podcasts outlining the new F tags. And I hope you found today's discussion helpful on chemical restraints for F tag 605. And Jennifer, I'd also like to thank you, and I am looking forward to our next podcast.
Thank you so much as well, Laura, and I'm looking forward to it as well. Our next podcast in this series of the 10 that have to do with abuse and incorporated in our 49, it will be F606, and that has to do with not employing or engaging staff with adverse action.
Wonderful. I'll talk to you next time, Jennifer. Thank you, everyone.
Legal disclaimer. Life Care Services, LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.